How are you again, Devika? All right. Nice to see you. Okay, Hare Krishna. So this is the 22nd of May, 2007. My mind's still in 1976, that's the problem. So we're doing the last segment then of Prabhupada, the Living Bhagavatam. I'll just get this up on my computer here. We've been talking about Prabhupada's book writing, and today we'll probably get into the section of instructions that Prabhupada gave to his disciples also for writing. Yesterday we finished just with some descriptions about the effort that Prabhupada was putting in to his writing, and also his desire to not get involved in management anymore, and to just simply concentrate on writing. As I mentioned, he didn't really ever get to that point where he was able to, you know, successfully extricate himself from management. Except probably in the last few months when Prabhupada changed his lila and he stopped preaching, active preaching, and entered into the stage that we call Nirjana Bhajan. He was still doing some translation work though, even when he was very, very ill. So that was Prabhupada's determination. Anyway, we talked mainly last couple of days about Prabhupada's work on the Bhagavatam, which was, you know, his opus. That was his main work. But there were other projects that Prabhupada had worked on, other writing projects. So we'll talk a little bit about those this morning. So on February the 8th, 1976, Prabhupada was in Mayapur. He'd gone there for the festival. And during his massage, Dayananda Prabhu, who was his temporary secretary at that time, he read the English translation and word-for-word transliteration of the two prayers that Prabhupada had written while on board the Jaladuta when he first sailed to America. The prayers were sent to him by Jai Satchinandana Das, from Los Angeles, who had translated them into English from the Bengali. Srila Prabhupada was pleased with his translations and suggested that they be published in the new printing of the songbook for all of the devotees to learn and sing. One of them was already named Makine Bhagavat Dharma, which means preaching in the Western countries, and Prabhupada named the other one Prayer to the Lotus Feet of Krishna. So I don't know whether I haven't seen a recent edition of the songbook. I don't know whether those prayers are in there or not.
Yeah,
they are. Okay. But do the devotees learn them? I don't think so. It would be nice. There was an opportunity actually at one point to get Prabhupada to sing those poems that he had written. But unfortunately that the devotee that was doing the recording didn't want him to do it. We were in Los Angeles, because this was in February when he received this translation work from Jai Satchinandan. In early June, Prabhupada had gone to Los Angeles, and then he was invited to come to the Golden Avatar Studios that Krishnakanti Prabhu was running. At that time, Krishnakanti was also in charge of Prabhupada's tape ministry. And so he wanted Prabhupada to come and do some recording, and this, he had a professional recording studio. And somehow or another, he just got it in his head that he only wanted Prabhupada to sing the Hare Krishna mantra, because we had many recordings of Prabhupada chanting Hare Krishna. But his rationale was that we didn't have any professional recording of Prabhupada chanting Hare Krishna that belonged to ISKCON. The album that had first come out, the Happening album, in 1966, that was recorded by a gentleman called Alan Coleman. So the rights to that were actually his. It's interesting, actually, that story as well, how Prabhupada did that recording in 1966. It was, you know, the recording that the Beatles eventually got a hold of and that's what attracted them to Krishna consciousness. And, you know, it was like an underground classic in many ways. But Alan Coleman never paid Prabhupada any royalties until 1976, 10 years later. And then when we were in Delhi in March of 76, Alan turned up. He came to see Prabhupada and he gave him a check, I think, for about $2,000, which was the royalties from that happening album, so 10 years later. And then he also gave Prabhupada another $2,000 as a personal donation. So it wasn't like he was trying to cheat him, but somehow or another he didn't get around to it. Anyway, that was the recording. So Krishna County wanted a professional recording of Prabhupada chanting Hare Krishna that belonged to ISKCON. So, you know, I was pushing him. Why don't you get Prabhupada to chant his poems, you know, to sing them? We have no recording of Prabhupada actually speaking the poems that he wrote. And he just wouldn't do it. He refused. So anyway, that was an opportunity that was lost. Although Jai Satyanandan did come into Prabhupada's room one afternoon in Los Angeles, and he sang them on the harmonium. And Prabhupada listened. He also, at that time, Prabhupada declined to sing them. And he had Jai Satyanandan sing them to him instead. And he liked it very much. Then I think just towards the end of our stay there, maybe on the 10th of June, there was the world premiere of a new film by Yadabara and Vishaka called Spiritual Frontier. And that was a film about New Vrindavan, basically. Simple living and high thinking in New Vrindavan. So that was, it was like a kind of a documentary film. And that had its premiere. So Prabhupada had gone down into the temple room at about 7 in the evening. There were about 500 devotees packed in there. And they projected it on the wall opposite his Vyasasan. And before they showed the film, as soon as Prabhupada came in and sat down, then immediately all the devotees led by Jai Satyanandan sang these prayers, Makine Bhagavat Dharma, and the prayer to the lotus feet of Krishna. So that was very nice. Prabhupada liked hearing the devotees sing it.
Can you record
it? I don't know, actually. I doubt it. anyway, so that was one. Prabhupada did a little bit of poetry writing. He was very good at poetry, very good at verse. As we mentioned before, the Gita Gan, that's a Bengali poetical rendition of the Bhagavad Gita. And Prabhupada probably could have done a lot more. It's in our line. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Narottam Das Thakur. They were all writing very wonderful songs and poems. But Prabhupada was so busy with all of his other stuff that he just didn't get the time to do anything more. So anyway, we have those two poems. Another idea that Prabhupada had was making a Sanskrit grammar based on, making a system for devotees to learn Sanskrit based on a grammar of Krishna conscious terminology. So that came up when we were in Bombay in April of 76. We were on the morning walk. There was a gentleman that used to come out with Prabhupada whenever he was in Bombay. His name was Dr. Patel, because there are millions of Patels. But anyway, this particular Dr. Patel, he was quite a lively little fellow, about 5 feet tall, and with a presence twice as big as his height. He was always engaging Prabhupada in debate, philosophical wrangling, and of course Prabhupada would always defeat him. He had, started off, he was a Mayavadi, but somehow or another he had been attracted to Prabhupada on the beach, because he used to go and walk up and down the Juhu beach at the same time that Prabhupada did. And when Prabhupada first got the land in Juhu, then he saw, here's this sadhu with these Western followers. So he was very, attracted to that. He came over and introduced himself. And then from then on, whenever Prabhupada walked, Dr. Patel was always there. And he would, completely hog the conversation so nobody else could get a word in edgeways. But anyway, it was nice. And gradually, over a period of 2 or 3 years, Prabhupada converted him from being a Mayavadi into being a devotee. and he started reading Srila Prabhupada's books. He knew Sanskrit himself. He was quite a learned fellow. And Prabhupada was really quite fond of him. Although I can't say that the devotees were always. Because sometimes, you know, he was a little fractious in his dealing with the devotees. And sometimes also we sometimes felt that he was a bit too pushy in the way that he would debate with Srila Prabhupada. But Prabhupada didn't mind. So anyway, this particular day, April the 13th, Dr. Patella made a suggestion for the devotees for learning Sanskrit. So Prabhupada concluded that if a student is serious, he can learn Sanskrit simply by reading his books, because in them he is given the word meanings. After studying a few sentences, he said, one can understand the verb, the subject, the object, and so forth. Prabhupada told Dr. Patel that if he had had more time, then he would have made a Sanskrit grammar based on the Bhagavad Gita. But now, he said, I am too busy. So he suggested that Dr. Patel could do it, since he knows both Sanskrit and English. You can do that. People will read Bhagavad Gita grammar. On the Bhagavad Gita, teach them the grammar. Just like Jiva Goswami, he compiled the Harinamamrita Vyakarana. So similarly, you can write. You have the knowledge of Sanskrit, and through English, teaching it, using it, then Bhagavad Gita grammar, and people will take it. And I think actually that was eventually done a few years ago. I think one of our devotees actually has published some kind of a Bhagavad Gita based grammar, a system for learning Sanskrit. April the 23rd, so this was about 10 days later, Prabhupada was here in Melbourne, and he was taking his midday massage in the sitting room there, the big room. So Prabhupada was answering a couple of letters. Yashoda Nandan Swami had written from Hyderabad in South India to request that the Brahma Samhita, which had already been published by the Gaudiya Mat, be reprinted by the BBT. He also suggested that Prabhupada could perhaps write an introduction to that book. And Prabhupada had previously been asked if he would translate the Brahma Samhita, if he had a plan for that. Prabhupada said, no, my spiritual master has already done it, so there's no need for me to do it. So like that. So then they asked, could you write an introduction then, and we can reprint it. Yasoda Nandan also said that he and Achyutananda Swami, in the process of producing a cassette tape in which they chant the verses 29 through 64 from chapter 5. That's what we call the Brahma Samhita. They intended to use the proceeds from the sale of the tapes to help with the printing costs of the Brahma Samhita. He, Achyutananda Swami, and a party of 7 brahmacharis and 1 Gurukul boy, Jagaman Das, are headed to Karnataka for a preaching program there. Prabhupada replied that the BBT trustees can decide whether to print the Brahma Samhita, and if they approve, then he'll be glad to write an introduction. So I don't know whether that was ever done either. I don't believe it was. But of course, we do produce the Brahma Samhita in its original form. Another book project, of course, Prabhupada produced the Krishna book. That also, of course, it's the Bhagavatam, it's the 10th canto summary study. But Prabhupada wrote that before he completed the Bhagavad Gita, because he wanted to make sure that the devotees had access to all of Krishna's pastimes, just in case he didn't make it. Yeah. So sometimes there's some so-called devotees, they suggest that, you know, Prabhupada left us before he could complete the 10th canto, and that somehow or another has some esoteric or spiritual significance, that the devotees in ISKCON are not fit to hear the more intimate pastimes of, you know, Krishna. Well, the reply to that is that that was the first canto that Prabhupada fully translated, almost. He did translate the 10th canto in the form of the Krishna book. And in fact, in late 1976, Prabhupada even told us that he was considering, when he finished the 9th canto, he was considering skipping the 10th canto and going straight to the 11th and 12th cantos, because he'd already done the 10th canto in the form of the Krishna book. So if you ever hear that kind of criticism, that's your reply. Anyway, so on June 13th, 1976, Prabhupada was in Detroit. And some young man had come, he was long-haired, like this. He brought his mother, and they had an interview with Prabhupada. And this boy had been living in the temple for some period, and then he couldn't, you know, strictly follow, so he left. But his mother actually, in the meantime, had taken an interest in Krishna consciousness, and I think she was more interested than he was. But anyway, he had some nice sentiments. So they came, and they met with Prabhupada, and it was mentioned that the following month we were due to meet with George Harrison in London. So this boy, he was expressing how he had, or he regarded Srila Prabhupada and George Harrison on the same level. Yeah, he was, you know, into his music. So he told Prabhupada, he said, "My heart has been captivated by the person who first introduced me to you, George Harrison." So when he said that, Prabhupada said, "Oh, George Harrison? Oh, you came with him?" Prabhupada was very innocent, so when he said, "George Harrison introduced me to you," he was talking, of course, through his music. Prabhupada said, "Oh, George, you came with him?" So the boy explained, "I first became interested several years back in what you were writing, especially when I began to see the tie-in with what he was singing. And now the music that he's doing right now reflects what I'm looking for myself." Of course, at this point, 76, George was, you know, his albums were practically at least 90% Krishna conscious, you know, all the lyrics and everything. So this boy was attracted, as many devotees were in the early 70s. I remember myself also, the album All Things Must Pass, you know, some of the songs there, chanting the names of the Lord, and they were the only songs that I used to like to listen to. That was before I joined the temple. So there were a lot of devotees that got introduced to Krishna consciousness by George Harrison. So he did a lot of good service. So Sasrup Maharaj said that the boy was more a follower of George than he was of Srila Prabhupada. Out of respect for Prabhupada, the boy didn't want to have to make such distinctions though. He said, "Well, I see the two of you as not, I see you both standing together. I don't see you apart. That's why I'm here right now." So Prabhupada smiled. He could understand the boy wasn't too philosophically inclined, but he was congenial, and he offered him encouragement through his own interests. "Thank you. This boy, George, he is also nice. He comes to me. He offers me. He has given one great big estate in London, and he has financed my first Krishna book. It required $19,000. So I asked him that I have no money. If you can pay, then I can print it." And so he gave immediately. "So I have admitted, you have seen my Krishna book? You just show him." So the boy smiled. He said, "Oh yes, I feel that I'm personally in debt to him as well as being in debt to you at this point in my life." Referring to George once more, Prabhupada repeated, "He's a good boy." So it was nice. And actually there's an interesting story about how that $19,000 was donated, because Shyamasundar Prabhu, he was of course George's contact with the Krishna consciousness movement. He was the first devotee that he met, and they got along extremely well together. So Shyamasundar was always very, very careful not to ask George for anything. He was just trying to give him Krishna consciousness, and then whatever came as a natural consequence, fine. But he didn't want to ask him for anything, because he knew big people like that, they're always being approached by people with ulterior motives. One of my godbrothers, Matcha Avatar, when he joined, he was a multimillionaire. He was from Italy, he was a designer. And he joined late 76. He met Prabhupada when we were in Delhi. And he described that he'd become so, you know, disillusioned with the whole social scene that he was in. He was making so much money, and he had five or six businesses and like this. And he said he was fed up of, you know, the anonymous friends yeah, that kept coming up to meet with him. It's an interesting term, anonymous friends. A friend means you're not anonymous. But when you're rich, you have many friends who are all anonymous. Means you don't know them at all. Anyway, so that's the situation. George was like that. So Shyamasundara was very careful not to ask him for anything. So then one day, Prabhupada called Shyamasundara in. He said, now we've got this Krishna book, it's completed. This was 69. I have no money. So you ask George. And Shyamasundara told me, he said, when I went in, I knew what Prabhupada was going to ask, and I was dreading it. Because he said, I didn't, you know, of course I wanted to do what Prabhupada wanted, but he said, I really didn't want to ask George for anything, because I felt that it would disturb our relationship. But anyway, Prabhupada told him, no, you ask him, he'll give. So he said, all right, but I need a little bit of time. So then off he went, and he was trying to think how to do this. And some little time went by. I think Prabhupada even called him in again another time and asked him, so, did you ask? And he admitted that he hadn't. But he said he was going for a dinner with George some evening coming up. So he said, I'll definitely ask him. So he went to this dinner with George, and it was at George's place at Friar Park, that big country estate that he had. And there was some other guy there, I think he was some famous British sculptor. So they're having dinner together. And then at a certain point, then Shyamasundara knew, now there's no time left, I'm going to have to just ask him. So then he told George, he said, well, George, you know, Prabhupada's been working on this book, Krishna book, and he doesn't have any money to print it. And he said, as soon as he said that, George got this look on his face like, uh-oh, here it comes, right? And then just at that moment, there was a big storm going on outside, yeah, British, you know, weather, and there's big storms raging outside, and then just at that moment, there was this boom like this, and the whole house shook. It got hit by lightning, and all the lights went out. So they're all just sitting there in the darkness. And then after a few, you know, seconds or a minute or two, boom, the lights came back on again. And he said, Shyam said that George was sitting there, he had this grin from ear to ear. And he was just like, you know, laughing. And he just said, well, after that, he said, how can I refuse? So that was how, you know, they got the money for the printing of the Krishna book. So that was, anyway, that was another printing, you know, book project that Prabhupada had been working on. And of course, George wrote the introduction. And on the basis of that introduction that George wrote, we must have sold tens of thousands of Krishna books. You know, you stop people in the street, flip it open and say, George Harrison wants you to have this book. That was it. You know, they would just buy it on the spot. Oh, George Harrison, like that. So he was also a book distributor. Okay. Another aspect of Prabhupada's writings was against material science. I don't think that there was a single day that when I was with Prabhupada when he didn't say something against material science. It was his favorite preaching topic, you know, attacking the whole concept of evolution, the idea of, you know, chemical origins of life and all these things. So when we were in New Brindavan, June 28th, 1976, then Prabhupada gave an amusing comparison, you know, describing the writing of the scientists and their bluffing. So we were discussing the scientists and their bluffing. Prabhupada told us a funny story about Gopal Ban, who was a court jester in West Bengal during the reign of Raja Krishna Chandra. So Gopal Ban was a very intelligent, clever fellow, and of course in the court system the king's always dealing with very weighty topics day after day, so many problems, and there's no relief, so they would keep a court jester, and that man's business was to make the king laugh. So he had a little bit of license, you know, he could do things that nobody else could do, and the king would accept it, even poke fun at the king himself sometimes, you know, just because the king needed somebody there to make him laugh and take his, you know, mind off of all the problems that he had. So Gopal Ban, there's many, many stories about Gopal Ban. in Bengali law. So anyway, this particular story, Prabhupada told this story, and by it he cleverly illustrated how the scientists obtained their grants, because the scientists are always getting millions and billions of dollars from the governments on the promise of so many, you know, research and development. So Prabhupada told us, he said, the Mohammedan governor of the day, he had called for him. So he said, now, Gopal Ban, I've heard that you are very expert. Can you write a similar book as the Mahabharata about my kingdom? Oh yes, why not? It is not difficult. So then he took some hundreds of thousands of rupees. All right, but I need an advance, right? You give me 10,000. Oh, no, I need another 10,000. Oh, no, I need another 10,000. So in this way, he's getting more and more money for writing the Mahabharata about the Mohammedan ruler. So in this way, he was asking, give another 10,000, another. So then, when will the book be finished? You have taken so much money. No, no, it's just on the verge of being finished. So then when he saw that no more money can be taken, I've taken so much, so then he told the governor, now sir, one information is very essential. You give me that and your Mahabharata will be finished. Everything is already there. Oh yes, what is that information? Now, your wife, how many husbands does she have? Because in Islam, the men, they have four wives, they're allowed, like this. But now he's asking, how many husbands does your wife have? Say, what? What is this nonsense? No, well, that's the main subject matter of the Mahabharata. Draupadi had five husbands. So, you're such a great person, your wife must be having at least one dozen. So, otherwise, how will this Mahabharata be written? What? This is the subject matter? Yes, that is the only subject matter. Draupadi had five husbands. So you're such a big nawab, your wife must be having at least one dozen. So you just give me their names. So then he became very angry. Don't you talk this nonsense. No, but then I cannot finish your Mahabharata. I have already invested all the money. So then he gave him another 10,000 rupees. All right, stop all this nonsense. Finish. So, in this way, Prabhupada was laughing all the way through his telling of it, making comical gestures as he relayed the foolishness of the Nawab and the sharp wit of Gopal Ban in taking advantage of his combined ignorance and pride. So these rascals, Prabhupada said, meaning the scientists, they're writing Gopal Ban's Mahabharata. And the rascal government is paying them. So they'll never be able to produce anything. You challenge them. As soon as you say, make an egg. Oh, that we cannot do. And then they'll chant, chemical evolution, chemical evolution, and they'll get the Nobel Prize. Rascals. But how the people are so foolish that they believe this. So, again, we were in Sanand in 1975, Gujarat. This was December the 26th. Prabhupada was talking about, you know, the scientists again. He was saying, modern scientists, philosophers, Western people, they don't accept that God is the creator of everything. And their theory of creation is this chemical composition. They think that chemical composition is the cause of life. So the Asura's theory of creation is a chance theory, but we do not accept. We are preaching against them, writing books against them. We are challenging this atheistic theory of creation. The Krishna consciousness movement is against the Asuras. Krishna also came down to kill the Asuras. Paritranaya sadhanam vinashaya chaduskritam. The Asuras, they cannot flourish by their atheistic theory. Unless one comes to Krishna consciousness, then he has to be put into the different types of Asuric Yoni, the lowest species, to suffer in this material world. So we're writing books. Prabhupada was very conscious about writing books specifically against the material scientists, and he wanted his disciples to do that. It'll come up later on about how Swarup Damodar also did that. But of course, another area that Prabhupada was challenging the material scientists about was cosmology and their so-called trip to the moon, because that was very controversial. even within ISKCON, some of Prabhupada's disciples didn't accept or couldn't accept Prabhupada's statement that they never went to the moon. And in fact, one of Prabhupada's own personal servants left the movement because he just couldn't accept when Prabhupada said that they didn't go to the moon. Anyway, this was August the 3rd, 1976. We were chatting in Prabhupada's room with him. I think Harikesh was there and myself. And Prabhupada got onto this moon excursion. So he said, I made the point, of course, no discussion with Prabhupada can be complete without him exposing the flaws of the scientists. He used their failed attempts to go to other planets as a prime example. They are refused. No, you cannot go. Then he delighted the assembly with his challenge. Live there. You go. This is practical. We see the moon planet is there. Oh, we have got machine. We can go. But you cannot go. This is the law of nature. This is practically proof. But they are so rascal and fool. Oh, they are going to other planet. They do not think that with the one planet that we have already failed. So they are called Puna Punas Chavita Chavananam. They are simply chewing the chewed. They are being baffled at every step, and still they are trying to overcome the laws of nature. This is their foolishness. Naradama. Maya Parita Jnana. Maya is so strong upon them, and their so-called scientific knowledge is useless. In 1958, when I wrote that Easy Journey to Other Planets, I wrote in that book that this moon planet is simply childish, means the attempt, and a waste of time. And actually, it has been proved. So I was not a scientist, neither I am a scientist. So how did I say? So I said on the strength of the version of the Vedic literature that it is not possible. You cannot go there. And it was interesting because when we got to Los Angeles, one man came, he was a newspaper reporter. He had interviewed Prabhupada in 1969, just before the so-called moon landing. And he had asked Prabhupada, do you think that they can go to the moon? And Prabhupada said, no, it's not possible. Yeah. And why? Because the people that live there, they have a different standard, and you can't just enter into that by some mechanical means. So then now, in 1976, the same man was back again doing another interview. So he reminded Prabhupada that previously you told me that they couldn't go. So now they've gone. What do you say about that? Prabhupada said, no, they didn't go. He said, I told you they couldn't go. And then the reporter was kind of completely baffled. He couldn't figure out what was going on. Anyway, so, as I say, there were difficulties even, for Prabhupada's own disciples sometimes in accepting that statement. So one difficulty of that nature arose with Hayagriva Prabhu. So, even the best authors, they require a good editor. And Prabhupada was fortunate to get the services of a qualified English professor, Hayagriva Prabhu, right from the very beginning of his formation of ISKCON. With his and gradually other people's help, he was able to form the publishing house which later became known as the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust. Srila Prabhupada, who was aware of his limited time, and in order to expedite publication and printing, would simply hand over the manuscripts to his editors, and he didn't always check the corrections that they had made in the editing and polishing up of his work. So this sometimes led to mistakes which were discovered only later. So don't put your foot out like that towards the deities. Yeah, cover it up. Aware of this, Prabhupada had already started the revision and the correction of the mistakes in his books. So when I traveled with him, the first and second cantos were already being edited to correct mistakes. Prabhupada ordered that the Bhagavad Gita had to be corrected because there were many mistakes that he'd seen in that. One mistake that he discovered was in this Easy Journey to Other Planets. So I mentioned yesterday how Hayagriva, he had just come back to the movement, and the BBT sent him to Hawaii to work on this philosophy book. And during his stay there, then there was some discussion about this Easy Journey to Other Planets. So on May the 23rd, early this morning, before going out for his walk, Prabhupada questioned Hayagriva about the editing of the first book that he had written in 1958, Easy Journey to Other Planets. Several days ago, Prabhupada was preaching to me about the defects of modern science. I just happened to be in Prabhupada's room and he was talking, and like that, he started talking about the bluff of modern space travel, and he referred me to his Easy Journey to Other Planets. I have written there that the attempts to go to the moon are simply childish. You've read that? So I couldn't recall specifically whether he'd said that, and I excused myself by saying, well, I hadn't read the book since I'd first seen it in 1972. So I'd read it then, but now it's 76, and I really couldn't recall, you know, reading that particular statement. So Prabhupada then, he suspected something, you know, not that, you know, something wrong with me, but he asked me, he said, he looked at me thoughtfully for a second, and then he asked me to get him a copy. So I did so, and then over the next couple of days he read the whole book through himself. He discovered that his statement wasn't in there, it had been edited out. So when Prabhupada questioned Hayagriva, Hayagriva admitted to having omitted it. He tried to defend himself. Well, it was written before they went there, so afterwards I left it out. Prabhupada was very, very upset. He spent most of the morning walk criticizing Hayagriva for thinking that the spiritual master was an ordinary man subject to mistakes, and for accepting the words of the scientists above the words of his guru. "This means I cannot trust you," he said. Later, back in the temple, during breakfast, I went into Hayagriva's room. "What's he so angry at?" he asked me sullenly, referring to Srila Prabhupada. He was petulant, like a child, his ego stung by the chastisement of his father. I didn't like it, and I told him so. We began to argue, with me angrily berating him for his overly familiar attitude, and he was sulkily defending his actions, declaring that no one would believe the statement that you can't go to the moon. I condemned him for not relying on his spiritual master and for watering down the philosophy to suit the mentality of the non-devotee masses. "The masses won't accept a book that declares it's impossible to journey to the moon," he pouted testily. "They simply won't accept Prabhupada's statements. They're only going to believe the scientists." "We don't care what people believe," I snapped back. "People believe one thing now, and in 20 years' time they'll believe exactly the opposite. We don't care what they accept. We accept what Prabhupada says, and our only business is to present Prabhupada's exact words without altering them or imposing our own concocted ideas about what is or what is not acceptable. It is not our business to pander to the whims of the masses." I left him to eat his breakfast, and I returned to my room next to Prabhupada's. A few minutes later, Hayagriva went past in the corridor, entered Prabhupada's room, and with tears welling in his eyes, he apologized to his divine grace. Prabhupada was pleased, and he accepted his penitent regrets. Still, the book now needs to be changed, and Prabhupada gave instructions to inform the BBT that the Easy Journey had to be re-edited to include the missing passage. So that was done eventually. It's back in there now. So January the 6th, 1977, this is about 6 months later, we were in Bombay. Prabhupada has received the new Russian translation of Easy Journey to Other Planets. So this was the first, you know, book in Russian. And Prabhupada was in ecstasy. He said, oh, he said, this is epoch making. He told Gopal Krishna had been in previously and shown Prabhupada a letter from a Russian book agent who had sent a New Year's card to him. So he had gone to Russia, and he had gone as a businessman, Indian businessman, but as a representative of the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust. He was received very favorably. So now he got a Christmas card, New Year's card, from this Russian book agent. Prabhupada thought that that was very significant and important. So Prabhupada called him in, and he dictated a letter to the agents firstly thanking them for the card, and then telling them about the new book in their language. He asked for their opinions about it, and he expressed the opinion that with Russian intelligence and Indian culture, the whole world could progress. It's very interesting, because Prabhupada always used to give us that example of the lame man and the blind man. Yeah, India is lame, the West is blind, but if you combine them together, the lame man rides on the shoulders of the blind man, and that way they can make some progress. So he always said Western intelligence and Indian culture. Now, there was a chance to preach in Russia, and Prabhupada immediately told them, now with Russian intelligence and Indian culture, we can make the whole world can progress. Anyway, so that was the easy journey to other planets. I mentioned about Bhagavad Gita also. There were some problems with that. One of those was exposed here in Melbourne in 1976, April the 21st. Prabhupada was coming back from his morning walk in the car. So he told Pushta Krishna Maharaj to have the BBT in Los Angeles correct an editor's mistake in the Bhagavad Gita that he had detected during a conversation in his room the previous day. While talking about cow protection, he had asked Pushta Krishna to look up verse 1844. When Pushta Krishna read the verse aloud, Prabhupada noted a mistranslation of an important word. So today he told him, "You immediately inform Rameshwara. In the Bhagavad Gita yesterday, they have edited cattle raising. But it is not cattle raising. Cattle raising means to grow and kill. That means the rascals, they have edited. Hayagriva, he has edited. He thought, cattle raising. It is not cattle raising. It is a mistranslation. It is Gauraksha, giving protection to the cows. It is especially mentioned, Gauraksha, not otherwise. The animal eaters, they may take some other animal, but not the cow. They can take pig, goats, lambs, rabbits, many others if they want to eat meat, birds. There are so many. But there is no such mention that those animals should be protected. No, the cows should be protected. That is Krishna's order." So he didn't like that. Cattle raising, he knew. This is, you know, a phraseology from the meat eaters. So that was, again, an order that Prabhupada gave for editing his books. Again, there's a controversy that since Prabhupada's disappearance, then, you know, the BBT editors, Jaidwaita Maharaj and others, they undertook a complete re-editing of all of Prabhupada's books, you know, to correct the many mistakes that were in there. And some people have said, no, you can't do that. It's a big offense, you know, to edit Prabhupada's books. But Prabhupada himself had started them on the process of re-editing his books even before he left. And that was their service. They were given that service by Srila Prabhupada. So, at least personally, I don't have a problem with that. So, other editors. Hayagriva was one editor. May the 4th, 1976, in Hawaii. There were two letters from Los Angeles from the managers of the English and the Spanish BBTs. Both of them reported a lot of activity in book production and printing. Radha Balabhadas has 7 titles in English at various stages of development. The Bhagavatam 7th Canto Part 2 will go to the printer before the appearance day of Lord Nrsimhadev this month, which happens to be the subject matter of that volume. 500,000 copies of Perfection of Yoga are at the press. Life Comes from Life and Perfect Questions and Perfect Answers are in the design stage, and 2 projects by Prabhupada's disciples, Satsrup Das Goswami and Dristadyumna Swami, are underway. As well as this, Hayagriva is working on editing the philosophy book and another book on Lord Kapil's teachings. The only delays that Radha Balabha reported were from India. The songbook reprint is awaiting the return of Jagannath Das from Radhakund. He decided to spend 2 months there, so we have to temporarily send your tapes to Nittai and Vrindavan until Jagannath returns from his frivolous vacation. Nittai hasn't sent me any corrections for the reprints of the first and second cantos, so I want to reprint them as they are. So at that point they were trying to re-edit, you know, the first and second cantos, but there were delays with these two editors, Nittai and Jagannath. So he wanted to just go ahead and not wait. So Prabhupada was happy to hear how all the work is going on. He approved Radhabalabha's request not to wait for Nittai and Jagannath. He said, once Pradyumna comes to join me here from India, then there will be no need for Nittai Das or Jagannath Das to edit the Srimad Bhagavatam. So Pradyumna actually turned up a few days later, and then he stayed with Prabhupada on his party up until his disappearance. So that was about a year and a half that he was traveling with him. And Prabhupada, in the meantime, the reason for Nittai and Jagannath's delays was that because they were getting involved in some Sahaja activity in Vrindavan. And by another 3 months, Nittai was gone. He officially left ISKCON, and he also rejected Srila Prabhupada as his spiritual master. He got poisoned by some so-called bhaktas, big devotees in Vrindavan, who he'd gone there to learn Sanskrit from. And then in the course of learning Sanskrit, he was fed all this poison, and then that turned him against Srila Prabhupada. Anyway, Prabhupada understood there's some problem with these men, and therefore he didn't want them to touch his books anymore. Yeah. So this Sanskrit editing then, you know, required some good qualified devotees, but sometimes the devotees got affected by, you know, their association and things and made mistakes or, you know, got turned. So that came up. Anyway, Pradyumna, as we mentioned, he came to join Prabhupada. So in April, when we were in Bombay, Pradyumna Das, tall and bespectacled, thin and somewhat eccentric, arrived from South India today. He has a reputation amongst the devotees as a Sanskrit scholar. Some of them, even Srila Prabhupada sometimes, calls him Panditji. His wife, Arundhati Das, he had spoken with Prabhupada in Mayapur during the festival, and Prabhupada had requested through her that Pradyumna come and see him. Prabhupada wants him to join his party as his Sanskrit editor. Rather than translating all the Sanskrit himself, he wants Pradyumna to do it. This strategy will save a lot of time and effort and speed up the publication of the Bhagavatam, because it will free Srila Prabhupada so that he can concentrate on writing his purports. So Prabhupada's plan was that Pradyumna would actually work ahead of him. Yeah, not that Prabhupada would do the translation work and then Pradyumna would come in afterwards and edit it, but Pradyumna would actually do the verse translations, and then Prabhupada was going to come in and just put the purports in. That was his idea, and it would make things go quicker. Somehow or another, though, it didn't happen. And on August the 11th in 1976, when he was in Tehran, Pradyumna had been on the party about 3 months at that point, May, June, July, August, 3-4 months. So as Prabhupada translates and comments on the Bhagavatam, Pradyumna Prabhu edits the Sanskrit. Today, while Prabhupada took his massage, Pradyumna came in with some questions on the 8th canto, chapter 22. You can see how quickly Prabhupada was working at this point. He started the 8th canto when we were in Hawaii, and then within 3 months he'd done 22 chapters. So he's a good Sanskritist, but Prabhupada sometimes complains that he does not work hard enough. He's always lagging behind, whereas Prabhupada wants him to work ahead of himself, finishing the basic translation and the word-for-word translations before he gets to them. This would alleviate Prabhupada's workload so that he can concentrate on his purports. But so far, Pradyumna has not managed to do it. And it remained that way. So Aaron and he just couldn't, you know, do that part of Prabhupada's desire. Although he was a good Sanskrit editor, he was efficient in that respect. But he just, I don't know. Pradyumna was a very eccentric kind of character. So anyway, some other editing work. BTG, of course, that was another major publication. And there was a big controversy that arose over an article that was published in the Back to Godhead in mid-1976. So there was a couple of controversies. One of them, this was about Lord Nisringadev. This was on April the 10th. Prabhupada was in Vrindavan. And Yasodhanandan Swami had just come back from a tour of the south. So on the morning walk, Yasodhanandan, who had returned from the south yesterday, asked Prabhupada to confirm that Ahovalam in South India is the actual place of Lord Nisringadev's pastimes. He had taken photos that he wanted to publish in the Back to Godhead, Godhead magazine. However, Jayadvaita and others were doubting the claim. Prabhupada said, if there is some controversy, then it should be avoided. You know that Takatalian Nyaya. So there is a tree, tall tree. So one crow was there, and the tall fruit fell down. So two pundits, they began to argue. Oh, because the crow sat down on it, therefore the tall fruit fell down. And the other one said, no, the tall fruit was falling down, and the crow could not sit on it. And then they began to fight. No, this, no, this, no, 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 this, and so on. So he said, the main point is that Lord Nisringadev is our worshipful deity, no matter where he is. And then he quoted from the Brahma Samhita, he is situated everywhere, so why just take this place or that place? So this argument's still going on. I just had a whole bunch of exchanges with one of our devotees, who's again trying to push this point that Ahovalam is the place where Lord Nisringadev appeared. But actually, so far, he hasn't been able to come up with any Shastric evidence to support that. It is actually recognized by the Sri Vaishnavas as the place of the Lord's appearance. But there's still, so far, we haven't been given any Shastric statements to that effect. And the reason why there was a doubt was because in the Bhagavatam, although it doesn't say specifically where Lord Nisringadev appeared, in some previous verses it does say that when he drove out Indra, he occupied the throne of Indra. Yeah, the Mahendra Asana. It specifically says that, the throne of Indra. So he occupied that throne. So that's in the heavenly planets. It's not on this planet. So it doesn't say specifically where Lord Nisringadev killed Hiranyakashipu. It just says, you know, he appeared from the column of the palace. So you can say that it must have been the same palace, Indra's palace. But it doesn't specifically say that. So there's a controversy. Whether it was on this planet or on the heavenly planets like this, it's still going on. And therefore Prabhupada said, if there's a controversy, don't publish it. That's all. So that's one editor's consideration. Now, another much more specific problem came up a little later in August the 6th, 1976. It was Prabhupada's last day in New Mayapur in France. And although he was due to depart in the afternoon, Prabhupada decided to answer a long letter from Samati Murarji, the owner of the Sindhya Shipping Company and the patron of Srila Prabhupada's first voyage to the West. She expressed considerable dissatisfaction with a recently published article in the Back to Godhead, Volume 10, Number 8, which summarized a lecture that Prabhupada had given about the qualifications of the Guru. In it, he referred to the exchange where Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had criticized Sri Vallabhacharya for claiming that a commentary that he had written on the Srimad Bhagavatam was actually better than that of the ancient commentator Sridhar Swami. Since Samati Murarji is a devotee in the Vallabhacharya Sampradaya, she expressed shock and pain to read the article. She felt that Prabhupada's comments were provocative and highly objectionable. I had firm belief in your mission of spreading the message of Sri Krishna all over the world, but reading the above extract of your lecture, I was very much disappointed, since therein you attempt to portray an incorrect image of Sri Vallabhacharya based on hearsay. Time has been changing, and when we present the image of our ancient acharyas to the public today, great responsibility rests in us to preserve their greatness and in not in tarnishing them. Every acharya is great in his own way, and no acharya is greater than another. Each had come to this world to perform one's duties, and every acharya has done so in the best possible way. She was disturbed enough that she said she could give wide and adverse publicity against ISKCON, but she did not feel that that would serve anybody's interest. She ended with a request that things should be amicably resolved. I sincerely trust that your good self will take my observations in the proper perspective and spirit and publish your clarifications with a view to remove any misunderstanding which may have been created in the minds of the readers of Back to Godhead. So the article actually was a summary of a lecture that Prabhupada had given in London in 1973. And he had, you know, referred to this conversation between Lord Chaitanya and Vallabhacharya. And Vallabhacharya had gone to Lord Chaitanya and he had said, "Oh, just see, I have written a commentary. This is even better than that of Sridhar Swami. Sridhar Swami's commentary had this fault and that fault. Now I've corrected that." And Lord Chaitanya became very angry with him that he was criticizing a previous acharya. And so he told him, you know, that basically he said that you're like a prostitute. You're not being faithful to your Swami. Because Swami means husband. It refers to Sridhar Swami. So he said, one who is not faithful to the Swami is a prostitute. It was a play on words. And it was a chastisement, Lord Chaitanya to Vallabhacharya. But the Vallabhacharya followers, they don't accept that story. They reject that story. And so it is a controversy. Anyway, so Prabhupada had said this in this lecture, and it was reprinted in the Back to Godhead. We had many life members in Bombay who were also from the Vallabhacharya Sampradaya. And so they became very upset, and it became a huge thing. There was a big campaign, anti-ISKCON campaign in Bombay because of this one article. So now Samati Mararaji, she heard about it, and she wrote. So, concerned that Samati Mararaji not carry any misunderstandings of his statements, Srila Prabhupada sent her a lengthy reply. He began by saying that he was sorry to hear that she was agitated by the Back to Godhead article. He explained that his editors do not know the principle of Satyam Bruyat, Priyam Bruyat, that in the material world only palatable truths should be spoken and unpalatable truths should be carefully avoided. Nonetheless, he confirmed the fact of the incident as related in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. He explained that just as she was irritated by the criticism of Vallabhacharya, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was also agitated by Vallabhacharya's criticism of Sridhar Swami, who was accepted as the original commentator of the Srimad Bhagavatam long before Lord Chaitanya's day. Perhaps you know that there is an edition of the Bhagavatam by Krishna Shankar Shastri, Abhinava Sukha, Vedantacharya, Sahitya Tirtha, Sri Bhagavat Sudanidhi from Ahmedabad. That's quite a title. In his book, he has given almost all the important commentaries of the Bhagavatam, and this was where Prabhupada used to refer to when he was writing his purports. He had, you know, these Sanskrit commentaries of all the previous acharyas, about 14 different acharyas. They're all in this one book, this edition by this Krishna Shankar Shastri. And we carried that wherever we went, and Prabhupada would read all the tikkas or the commentaries on any particular verse before he composed his own purports. And of course he had the Bengali edition, Bhagavat commentaries by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur as well. So he would refer to both of those. Then he would make his commentary. So now he was stating that, and he's giving his authority. She had said hearsay. Prabhupada was making the point, no, this is actually in the Shastra. So he referred to this book, and he said, in this book he's given almost all the important commentaries on the Bhagavatam, commentators, as follows. Number one, Sridhar Swami. Number two, Sri Vamsidhara. Number three, Sri Gangashaya. Number four, Srimad Viraragavacharya. Number 5, Srimad Vijayadwaj Tirtha. Number 6, Srimad Jiva Goswami. Number 7, Srimad Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Number 8, Srimad Sukadev. Number 9, Goswami Sri Giridharilal from the Vallabha Sampradaya. Number 10, Sri Bhagavat Prasad Acharya, etc. And there were others also. So amongst all the commentaries, Sridhar Swami is given the first position. This parampara has existed for a very long time. Prabhupada gave evidence that although this system was accepted in Lord Chaitanya's time, Vallabhacharya had violated it by not accepting Sridhar Swami's commentary as preeminent. I am enclosing here with some photocopies of the important verses from the original book Chaitanya Charitamrita that specifically deal with the subject matter. These verses are from Anchalila chapter 7, entitled Lord Chaitanya Meets Vallabha Bhat. I would like to draw your attention to verse 113 on page 55, where Vallabha Bhat says, in my commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, he said, I have refuted the explanations of Sridhar Swami. I cannot accept his explanations. Moreover, verse 114 states, whatever Sridhar Swami reads, he explains according to the circumstances. Therefore, he is inconsistent in his explanations and cannot be accepted as an authority. So, Vallabha Bhat's declaration certainly agitated Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Consequently, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu remarked sarcastically that he considered that anyone who did not accept the Swami or Sridhar Swami as an authority was a prostitute. Prabhu hasi kahi. But he smiled and he said this jokingly because they were friends. Although this point is very controversial, it is not based on hearsay as you have stated, but it is authoritatively documented by the Chaitanya Charitamrita. As you have written in a friendly spirit, I do not wish to discuss this point any further. If you will kindly take a little trouble to read this chapter, Lord Chaitanya Meets Vallabha Bhat, you will understand the whole situation. Actually, Vallabha Bhat should not have criticized Sridhar Swami, because even now Sridhar Swami is very respected. Even authorities like Srila Jiva Goswami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mention in their commentaries Swami Charanat, as we have heard it from the lotus feet of Sridhar Swami. So when Vallabha Bhat criticized Sridhar Swami, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu criticized Vallabha Bhat strongly. So this is a fact. But this does not mean that Vallabha Bhat and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were inimical. Vallabha Bhat honored Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as a superior. Sometimes Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would chastise Vallabha Bhat, and sometimes he would favor him, because this was their relationship. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would never refuse the occasional invitations of Vallabha Bhat. So actually, in the Vallabha Sampradaya, they don't accept Lord Chaitanya as God. They think he's just another Acharya that was around at the same time that Vallabha Acharya was around, but they don't accept him as Krishna himself. This is the Pushti Mag. Everything will become clear if you kindly read this chapter with attention. For example, we see that two lawyers, they go into the courtroom to fight vigorously about a law point. But upon returning to the law library, they'll talk and embrace like friends. So you should always remember that we have no ill feelings towards Vallabha Bhattacharya. We have full respect for him. So there is no harm if these facts are discussed in the society of devotees. Devotees always humbly offer respects to everyone. But when there is a discussion on a point of Shastra, they do not observe the usual etiquette, satyam bruyat, priyam bruyat. They speak only the satyam, although it may not necessarily be priyam. Priyam means nice to hear, but satyam means truthful. For ordinary persons, you speak the priyam. Say something nice, don't upset them. But amongst devotees, you can have a frank discussion, because everybody knows there's no offense. Yeah, there may be some debate, some differences of opinions, but it's all done with the idea of pleasing Krishna, so there's no personal egos involved. Therefore, you can speak the truth, and it won't be taken as an offense. So I hope you will understand the whole situation. If you still have any doubts, I shall be glad to hear from you, and I shall try to satisfy you to the best of my ability. I am presently not in very good health. Nonetheless, I hope this meets you well." Prabhupada was not happy that the editors of the Bhakta Godhead had printed a controversial topic, and he said they should be more careful. He said they should be more discreet in what they publish and not disturb people who are friends of ISKCON. He explained that many of our life members in Bombay are followers also of Vallabhacharya. So that was in August, early August. About 3 weeks later, we were in New Delhi on the 28th. And Prabhupada received a package from Jagannath Sutadas, who was the editor-in-chief of the Bhakta Godhead. So they always used to send about 10 copies of the new edition of Bhakta Godhead. Prabhupada would get those every month. And Prabhupada used to read them as well. It wasn't that, you know, just because he didn't write it all that he didn't read it. He would check, and he liked to read the articles that were written by his disciples. So Jagannath Sutta sent volume 11, number 9. He expressed his desire to be allowed to continue to assist his divine grace in pushing on Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. Prabhupada was pleased to receive the magazines, and he humbly replied, "Actually, I am dependent on your mercy. If you kindly follow my instructions and continue to push on Krishna consciousness, that will make me very happy. You must very strictly observe the regulative principles and chant 16 rounds a day, and Krishna will give you guidance. This is also stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Tesham Satata Yuktanam Bhajatam Priti Purvakam Dadami Buddha Yogam Tam Yena Mamu Piyanti Te. To those who worship him with love, Krishna gives the guidance so that they can come back to him. The more you give service to Krishna, the more you become advanced. Yashadeve para bhakti yata deve tata guru tasyajikatita hiyata prakashante mahatmanaha. Only to those great souls who simultaneously have implicit faith in both the Lord and the spiritual master are all the imports of the Vedic knowledge automatically revealed. This is the secret of success." Interestingly enough, a couple of years later, Jagannath Sutta was gone. He became a follower of Jimmy Swaggart, televangelist. The Christian televangelists were just becoming big, and somehow or another, this man, he began to watch every Sunday morning the Jimmy Swaggart show, and he just got completely carried away with it. He lost his faith in Srila Prabhupada and he left ISKCON. So it's kind of prescient on Prabhupada's part that he wrote, you know, he just sent these magazines to Prabhupada with a simple statement. And Prabhupada wrote back this long letter, you know, telling him to have full faith in his spiritual master. Anyway. So then Prabhupada added a note about Samati Mararaji's recent complaint. "By the way, there has been some disturbance created by the publishing of a few comments on Vallabhacharya in Bhakta Godhead, Volume 10, Number 8, Page 5, Column 3, Paragraph 2. Kindly avoid comments such as these in future publications." So, and that controversy raged for, you know, quite some time. There's an interesting footnote to it that in December of 76, then, because most of the problem was in Bombay, and Giriraj was there trying to deal with it. And gradually they were settling it down. But there was one man, he was a big pujari in the Vallabha sect, living there in Bombay. He was one of their prominent pujaris. And he was very virulent, you know, in attacking Prabhupada personally and, you know, our sampradaya, everything to do with us. And he was putting out newsletters and causing a lot of problems. Eventually, he wrote a letter to Prabhupada personally. When we received that letter, it was so nasty and so offensive that we actually didn't show it to Prabhupada. We just sent it back to Giriraj and asked him to deal with it because it was just too offensive. And we didn't want, you know, to disturb Srila Prabhupada. When I read that letter, it just happened that I'd been reading this story about Ramachandra Khan, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and how when Lord Nityananda, first Haridas and then Lord Nityananda had come to his place, and he was so offensive that after Lord Nityananda had got up and left, the place where he had been sitting, this Ramachandra, he had gone there and he had purified it with cow dung and cow urine, because he felt, you know, Lord Nityananda had contaminated his place. So that was his mentality. So because of his offense, Lord Nityananda didn't say anything. But a few days later, then all the tax people came. And the taxman came in and he took all of his wealth and devastated the whole village. And I think they imprisoned him or they drove him away like this. So anyway, because of his offenses against Lord Nityananda, then the tax people came in and ruined him. So this story is in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. I just happened to be reading that story when we got this letter from this fellow. About 3 or 4 days later, I was amazed to read. God, I was thinking, when I read this letter, how can this man blaspheme Srila Prabhupada so much and not get a reaction? He's offending a pure devotee like this. He's got to get a reaction. About 3 or 4 days later, somebody gave us the newspaper, and I saw on the front page, there was an article that this Pujari was the same fellow. He had been raided by the tax people in Bombay. Yeah, and they had found in his flat some false wall, which they broke down, and it was lakhs and lakhs of cash and jewelry that he had illegally stored there. So they took everything off him and they threw him in jail. So, be very careful. So, anyway, there's another whole story about BTG, the editing of BTG, which I can't get into now because we don't have any time left. But that will come out in maybe volume 7 of my diary. Right now I'm just working on volume 6. And the final, there'll be 7 altogether. All right, so I think it's getting a little late. It's 9:05. There is another section on Prabhupada engaging his disciples in writing, but we don't have time for that. I'm leaving this morning. So I'd like to thank everybody for coming. It's been a pleasure to be here in Melbourne. Thank you very much, Aniruddha Prabhu, for inviting me down. And he's invited me back next year. So next year I'll try and come for a week or so, and then we'll do, you know, some more segments of the Prabhupada, the Living Bhagavatam seminar. So thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Is there any quick question before we finish, or comments? Yes, manager. Sridhar Swami, I don't know, he was around about, he was a commentator from I think the 13th century, around that time, several hundred years before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I'm speculating, but I think he was in the Madhva Sampradaya. Gaudiya Sampradaya didn't exist at that time. Yeah, it was the Madhva Sampradaya. Then later on, you know, we became a branch of the Madhva Sampradaya. But I'd have to check it. To be honest, I don't really know. But he is, as Prabhupada said, he is accepted as the original commentator on the Bhagavatam. Any other? Maharaj?
You were talking probably in the very beginning about the poems, Prabhupada.
Yeah.
PBT in Bombay just issued a note saying they're planning to print them all. There's about 7 or 8 prominent ones which they have.
Okay, yes.
There are Ashtakam and Vrindavan background
and Shishtashtakam and various other. Right. Yes. Maharaj is just saying the BBT in Bombay are going to publish all of Prabhupada's poems. Because there were 2 poems that Prabhupada wrote on the boat on when he arrived at Boston Pier. But there were other poems that Prabhupada wrote for the Vyasa Puja of his Guru Maharaj. So there was the one that we know, Adore Adore Ye All the Happy Day, Blesser Than Heaven, Sweeter Than May. That one was written in 36. But there were other ones that Prabhupada wrote in the late 50s, early 60s. I think 61 or something was the Viraha Ashtakam, which was really, you know, a glorification and a critique of Prabhupada's Godbrothers. That was a long one, that one. So there's some, and that's going to be published apparently in a small book. So that will be nice. Yeah. Any other questions or comments? All right, we'll finish there. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Just one little tiny thing, Harry, sorry, Prabhupada. In Vrindavan, that's Saturday years ago, one of them, a disciple of one of Prabhupada's godbrothers, did a little offering to Prabhupada at Prabhupada's disappearance day in the temple. And he made a very interesting comment. He didn't speak very good English, but he just said a few words. He said, Swami Maharaj, that's what he used to address, of course. He said, of all the followers of Prabhupada, was the only one who understood him. He knew what Prabhupada wanted. He said, he knew that he had to attempt to attack science. Everyone else was absorbed in studying and tapa and lila and wasting time. He knew what to do. He attacked science. Therefore, he is. He was praising Prabhupada.
That's very interesting. Everybody heard that? Yeah. I'll repeat that for the people on the recording, going to listen to the recording. Jananda Maharaj is just saying that several years ago, a disciple of one of Prabhupada's godbrothers came to Prabhupada's disappearance festival, and he spoke very nicely, and he said that out of all the disciples of Prabhupada, meaning Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, out of all of his disciples, Swami Maharaj, that's our Prabhupada, he alone understood what Srila Prabhupada intended, because he knew that he had to attack science. All the others were interested in Shastra, Tattva, this, that, debating and discussing and learning. But Prabhupada was attacking material science, because he knew that that's actually, you know, the real challenge to Krishna consciousness.
He also said, and sense gratification.
All right, and sense gratification. All right, that's it, definitely finished. Thank you.
I saw it okay.
Prabhupada's flat's in the room, and just, you know, 3 pieces of fruit, cut them off, that would be nice. I'm leaving at 10, so I have to thank you very much. Thank you. Merry Christmas.
Guess who this is? Have a guess. Maybe you will. Good luck. He's a son of somebody.
Yeah, well, he must be. He's young. Just current. I don't know. Vaguely familiar, but I'll never guess. You have to tell me.
Atul Krishna's son.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
All right. Merry Christmas. Yeah, very good. How old are you now?
22.
22. Yeah. And you're living in the temple?
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
Excellent. All right, very good. How long have you been here?
5 months. 6 months.
All right. Where's your dad?
Maipur. Lives in Maipur.
Oh, that's right. Oh, that's okay. Right. Yeah. He is. Yeah, of course, he's my next door neighbor. What am I thinking of? Yeah.
So familiar.
Wow. All right. Great. What's your name?
Uddhava.
Are you initiated?
No.
No. All right. That will come. Good, very happy to meet you. Your dad's engaging me in some work on the Maipur Institute.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's always trying to get me roped in to do some courses and things. So when I get back, we'll do that. Who gave me this?
None of my dear, probably. Was that with the recording from last night?
Yes.
Yeah?
I think so.
Where
Hare Krishna.
Was the translation of the first canto complete for...
Yeah, Prabhupada, when he just finished the first canto, then he came to the West.
I just missed a little bit of when you were saying it said by some that the 10th canto wasn't complete, and then you went back to say that the first canto maybe wasn't, but...
The first canto was completed, but, you know, pretty well before he even did any of the other cantos, Prabhupada did that Krishna, you know, summary study of the 10th canto. So, sometimes, you know, there's people that they like to criticize this on devotees. We're not very advanced, you know, we're all neophytes, blah, blah, blah. And the proof of that is that Prabhupada never finished his work of translating the Bhagavatam. He got into the early chapters of the 10th canto, but then when it came to the more intimate leelas, that was where he stopped. Well, that's true as a material fact, if you like, in that Prabhupada, you know, in his translation work, he disappeared just at that point. However, as I pointed out, Prabhupada had already translated the entire 10th canto, and in fact it was one of the first things that he did.
As a seventh book.
Yes, he did it as a summary study of the Krishna book. So all the stories are there and all the philosophies there, just the same. But, you know, Prabhupada did that right at the very beginning. So their claim that Prabhupada didn't want us, somehow or another, maybe Prabhupada or Krishna didn't want us, you know, to enter into the intimate pastimes because we weren't qualified, is simply bogus.
Because Prabhupada
had already done it years before. Anyway, there's always people like that.
That's clear to me. Thank you.
Hare Krishna. What's your name?
Darren.
Darren, all right. Please speak, Darren.
It's a pleasure.
Have you been coming here very long?
Not to the morning sessions. This is my first one.
Okay.
I had to be here to see. It was pertinent, actually, because I'm going to purchase a set of the Bhagavatam. Not today.
Oh.
So this is really good.
Yes. Yeah, good. It was Prabhupada's most important work, because they're all important. But the Bhagavatam has the full range of devotional service. It's all very clearly explained and revealed. In the Bhagavad Gita, you get like the essence. Yeah? It's very important to know the Bhagavad Gita, but the Bhagavatam gives, you know, extended explanations about all the different rasas, the relationships with Krishna, all the incarnations, etc. So, if you read the Bhagavatam, your life will become perfect. Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for coming.
Is that available? Are you publishing it as you go?
Yes. There's 5 volumes. I don't know. Annie Ruda was originally my distribution agent for Australia, I remember. But just recently, another devotee took over there, and he's in Sydney. He took all the stock with him to Sydney, but maybe there's a few that are available. You can ask whoever runs the store here. If they don't have it, then, as I say, there is some stock in Sydney. There's a devotee called Rupa Raghunath, but Annie Ruda can tell you how to get them. And they may have some in the store. If you read that, you know, you get so much detailed information and an intimate look at Prabhupada.
That's what I got from today. It was so important to me.
That's for all of us.
So, yeah.
It is. It's very important to know about Prabhupada's life and how he was living and, you know, how he was practicing devotional service. Because from that, a lot of the practical problems and, you know, incidences that came up in Prabhupada's time are still coming up now. We have to deal with them all the time.